You're listening to the Casterbridge podcast. My name is Christian Corley, and with me is James McLean and Brian Terranova. Welcome, chaps.
Dead silence.
Okay, I hate it when that happens. Anyway, yeah, I just leave that in for a bit of a laugh. So this is really interesting. Brian is here to talk to us because we haven't chatted with Brian for a long time, and he is here for a specific reason, but not just because we like him being part of the podcast, but also, do you know what? Through a slight bit of sort of, I forced it a little bit to make this number happen this week by releasing an extra podcast last week. And the figures don't actually, no one actually knows how many we've actually done, but this is numbered 400. This podcast will go out as number 400. So that's kind of quite a big deal in many ways, because not many podcasts have reached 400. But I mean, we may have actually done 450, or we may have done 350. The count's gone completely wrong. But numerically speaking, in terms of the number that precedes the title, this is number 400. So welcome back for issue 400.
An arbitrary number.
Well, they're all arbitrary. Every single number is arbitrary, isn't it?
This whole bit's just going to be re-edited. It's just going to be Christian going, welcome to our 400th episode. And this is all gone.
No, it won't. It'll be like this. How long have you been away? It's going to be exactly like this.
Too long.
It's arbitrary because it could be 400, it could be 450, it could be 350. So therefore, it's whatever we want to call it.
Yeah.
I'm sure we must have done more than 400.
I think we've done more than 400.
Our centenary special.
Listeners may know that extra podcasts appear at the bottom of the catalogue on iTunes, because I'm going through our old podcasts and uploading them to iTunes. Some of them have never been on iTunes, and some of them need a bit of re-editing and remastering to a better audio standard, so that takes place as well. And it's kind of a slow job, so that's why it's... We still don't know what the true figure is. But anyway, Brian is here because we haven't spoken to him for a while on the podcast. And obviously, you know, dear listener, that there's been a few things happening in the casting world on Doctor Who. There's the whole Russell T Davies thing, and there's Shuti Gatwa, and then there's David Tennant and Catherine Tate. And there's David Tennant waving glowing sticks around and stuff like that. So I thought it'd be interesting to find out how Brian feels about all these things, how he felt when he heard the news, and how much of it he believed first up, and all that sort of thing. Because we did a couple of podcasts a few weeks ago, didn't we, James? And it was kind of one thing after another. Surprise podcast. You know, we had a big podcast lined up to go out, which ended up going out, like, some of it went out 6 weeks after we recorded it in the end, because there was so much going on. Brian, this thing with Russell T Davies happened a few weeks ago, and then this other thing with a new Doctor happened, and then this other thing with David Tennant happened. I mean, from your point of view as someone who has a few David Tennant outfits, how did this hit you? How did this strike you?
Well, I mean, obviously, first let's talk about returning Doctors, right? Anytime there's a returning Doctor in the show, I just always think that's fun. Big Finish doing all their multi-doctor stories. You know, there may be too many of them at this point, but I don't care. It's still fun. It's like every time the Daleks show up, I don't care. It's fun. I want to watch them. So I was excited because I like the news. And quite frankly, I'm hoping, given all the different type of anniversaries that are actually happening with Doctor Who, I'm hoping there's more than just David Tennant coming back. But I was happy about it. As a guy who has, as you said, more than one David Tennant outfit, when I saw that he had a whole new outfit, then the panic attacked because the wallet was like, dude, I don't know, should we do this? Are we going to do this? And yeah, we're probably going to do this because I already bought the shoes. So there you go. So that's the first part. I think it'll be fun. I think it'll be interesting to see where they're going with this, but it also lends a hell of a lot of weight to all the rumors that have been going on for, what, about a year now?
Concerning various doctors and...
Well, concerning the rumors a while ago, maybe it was just months ago or whatever, but it's been a long time. The rumors kept saying that David Tennant was coming back as the 14th doctor.
Yeah.
And when they announced the actual new doctor, they didn't say the 14th doctor. They just said the new doctor. So it's like, and now David Tennant's got an entire new outfit, and Stephen Moffat presented the idea that the doctor can revisit old faces and so on. So I think, like, okay, so these rumors that David Tennant was coming back for a certain number of specials playing the 14th Doctor, it's like we're living in an information world now where rumors are no longer just rumors spread by people who have heard the craziest, weirdest things from some, you know, wino on the street. We're actually living in a world where people hear things that are actually genuinely true. Like, it's very hard to stay spoiler free. So we can sit here and we can look at like most of these rumors and go, yeah, that's probably true, rather than like sit there and go, that's crazy. You're out of your mind. That's not happening. You know? So it's like, it's, you could sit here and you can watch them filming the show, but it's kind of like, yeah, people have been talking about this for months. I mean, that's probably true considering now it's literally happening in front of our eyes.
Yeah.
It is true that John Nathan Turner had a considerable problem with having to prevent leaks from the wino on the street.
I mean, those winos, you gotta, they know too much.
They knew too much.
The wino who knew too much.
The wino, yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so I don't know, a returning doctor story, typically, especially given that Russell's writing it and his previous track record, it's actually got me to a point where I'm like, hey, this could be cool. I'm looking forward to this. I'm in. I'll check it out, of course. I'll always check it out, but whatever, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Now, the whole multiverse thing with Doctor Who has been raised both in the Doctor Who press and with comments from people, Rusty Davies included, and we've James and I have talked about it a few times. What do you think about that whole idea of bringing in doctors to talk to each other from different universes of Doctor Who as well? Because I mean, that whole idea was introduced, or reintroduced, if you excuse Inferno, in the Flux serial, wasn't it?
In Flux?
Yeah.
Yeah, so here's the thing. Everybody's doing multiverse right now.
Yeah.
You know, everybody literally is like, multiverse is everywhere. There was even a movie about a multiverse that was not connected to any kind of franchise. It was just a multiversal story because it is intriguing. I've always been fascinated. I think we've talked about this before. Parallel universe stories are one of my favorite things. And it's no surprise that could be what's going on. And I'm fully on board if that's what's going on. I do kind of think this could be potentially more face value, considering, you know, they've brought back Wilf and Donna and her family and her husband and her kid kind of thing. And it's like, is this truly just going to be an alternate universe 10th Doctor with an alternate universe Donna and so on? Like, how are they going to spin that if that's the case? Or is this really just a case of revisiting an old face and he's the 14th Doctor kind of thing? That said, for other rumors I've heard, I guess we'll go into that. I would actually really like to see a multiverse kind of angle, especially given the whole Ruth or Fugitive Doctor kind of storyline. I think it's already seemingly set up to be an alternate universe storyline and would play out ultra well as an alternate universe storyline. So I would be all for it, frankly. I mean, I like multiverse kind of concepts, and I would absolutely be down for that.
Yeah. I like it, but I find some of the things I watched recently in the cinema, two films in particular, didn't really, I think they felt a bit messy in places, as opposed to, and I mean, I'm actually talking about the Spider-Man movie and the Doctor Strange movie, whereas I think the animated Spider-Man movie, I think that did it much better.
I don't know. I got to be honest. I was completely taken with Spider-Man No Way Home. I actually find very little with that I didn't like. Whereas Multiverse of Madness, while I thought it was a good film, I feel like they really wanted the initials to spell mom for the Scarlet Witch storyline. Because as far as multiverse being madness goes, it was like, what, three worlds that they really spent any time in?
Yeah.
It was a good movie. I enjoyed the movie, but it didn't really warrant the title. It was just basically kind of Scarlet Witch's madness, and there was a multiverse in there, and therefore they got the initials they wanted. So I don't know. I thought Spider-Man No Way Home handled it better for sure. But at the same time, I really liked both movies, so I'm not going to complain too much.
James, have you gone?
Yeah. No, go on.
No, you go on.
I was just going to say, but I mean, obviously, as Brian alluded, and you to self, you know, the multiverse is further than just the Marvel stuff. Obviously, DC's been doing it for a while now as well. They've got DC stuff coming up. Other things coming up as well this spring. I'm trying to think what they were that kind of... But it's Doctor Who's quite an interesting one. I was going to ask Brian, because you remember you read the books. Is it... My brain says, is it Unnatural Forces or Unnatural something? The one which actually speaks about the... not about multiverses, but multiple realities in terms of the fractal paradox sort of going and changing the past so they could adjust continuity. So this is like, I think initially the looms were kind of removed in that, this idea right, that right. His past is restructured. I can't remember which book it was, but I think it's kind of interesting because while that's not multiverse, there's ways of doing multiverse if you don't want to branch out into what the Flux was suggesting and play with different realities. I'll be interested to see where it goes as well, because I think the reason that multiverses have caught on well is that because they have such a... They have a lucrative potential to franchises. And as we've said before, reinvigorating past franchises or part segments of a franchise which are now dead, which is exciting. You know, people like that. Fans have always loved that. They want to revisit stuff, and it creates new commercial worth to your 1990s Flash box set, or, you know, your Michael Keaton Batman, or, yeah, Sam Raimi Spider-Man. So there's that sort of great element, which is really what is energizing this, isn't it? It's not so much about the narrative, it's that it's kind of exciting that you can sort of tap into what audiences want to see in ways which is quite easy to tap them in. And that probably has a lot of potential for the Doctor Who.
To play on that, like, you know, everybody, that whole great debate, who's the better Spider-Man? You know, Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, or Tom Holland, right? And now they're all connected. They all exist. You don't have to take one over the other. You can understand that they all exist in the multiverse, and you can like the one you like, but still like another. And they're all just still seemingly, they exist and they all connect. Like you said, the old Flash lunchbox still now means something, because you validate. When you open up the multiverse, you don't just say, hey, our movie replaces that one because we've now made a quote better movie than that one. So it's a remake. It's a whatever. They don't exist together. They don't relate together aside from the name. You're actually sitting there going, no. These all are connected in some way. You can actually walk through a doorway into that universe from our movie. And you get the audience a little bit more on board going, oh, okay, they didn't just erase everything I love. They're just saying it exists on the side in comparison to this.
Which is funny, because that's, and we've said this before, that's entirely what's embedded in Doctor Who's framework, which is essentially a multiverse. You know, the Tom Baker era ends, Tom Baker's Doctor dies, and you start a brand new era, which with a new Doctor, with a new life, and it is almost as if it is you are recreating, you're rebooting your franchise each time into a new one. But because they're all interconnected, it doesn't invalidate the previous one, which is, you know, extremely ingenious. But I like that, as you were saying, this idea that it sort of takes the sting out of the commercial nature of film and television. One of the things I really hate about Netflix at the moment, and my disappointment with Netflix, is not its content, but how when it first came out, there was this feeling that it would actually break free from the commercial bindings of television being caught within its advertising structure, which means if a show didn't continue to meet the advertisement interest and demand for slots, the show would collapse. So you would end a show midway through its run if it wasn't meeting its audience value for its advertisers. And I thought, well, with Netflix, we won't get that anymore. You know, a show can carry on until it needs to end. If they need to end it early, fine, but there's none of that sudden shock because of the need to be wary of your advertisement. And I was watching Final Space and the third season of that, which was Netflix commission, Netflix exclusive. Second season, they announced the third season was coming on, which is great, but also be the last, ends on a cliffhanger. And there's a lot of Netflix shows doing that now. And that is really annoying. And how this connects to the multiverse is that things like The Flash, which only had one season, there's something very cathartic in seeing that character come back for that one more time, for those characters which didn't get those opportunities. Watching, you know, it's not the same thing, but watching Obi-Wan Kenobi, which is now on Disney Plus, and, you know, after he had a, Ewan McGregor, they had a very lukewarm response to the prequels, and to have that opportunity to see that character one more time. So not a cancellation per se, but these opportunities to draw in dead wood and set it alight again in your fire as Kindle is kind of exciting. And I think that's part of what it is. Franchises like it because it reinvigorates their properties. Audiences like it because it's what they damn well wanted, because quite often these things stop before audiences were finished with them. And that's what's so super cool about it. And I'd be interested to see, I mean, with Doctor Who, if they did do multiverses, what would they do? I mean, you've got the Peter Cushing stuff, I guess. You could have Bernard Cribbins meet Bernard Cribbins.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, here's the thing. What multiverse actually opens up, first of all, let's go with the idea that David Tennant is a multiverse version of the 10th Doctor. So this way we don't have to worry about a messed up number system again. You're just looking at an alternate Doctor. Now, why would we be looking at an alternate Doctor? There has to be some kind of threat to the multiverse where these multiversal Doctors come in. But what that allows you to do is also show Peter Davison, Tom Baker, Colin Baker, Sylvester McCoy, Paul McGann, and any of the new series Doctors to come back in, look the age that they are, and have it be normal, because in their universe, that's what they look like. And you don't have to worry about coming up with an explanation. Although I still always struggle with that when people are like, how can they play the role looking the way they look, when we already have had Time Crash for how many years now that had an excuse 15? Built in, and it's BS. It makes no sense, but it's there. Use it. And then you don't have to worry about the explanation. But the multiverse is great. But what it also gives you, and do we care about spoilers of things like Multiverse of Madness in this? Are we caring? We're assuming people watch this. Whatever. This is your spoiler.
I haven't seen
one.
You
haven't seen it? Okay.
No.
Well, I'll say this, but I won't put any context to it, but whatever, it's already out there, and I'm sorry. But it allows you to go ahead and kill certain people that you ordinarily wouldn't be able to kill in your regular universe. Right? Yeah. So it opens up your storytelling so that you can do a story where the fourth Doctor comes in from an alternate reality, and maybe the Master kills. As a matter of fact, Big Finish did this. They did a story where the Master did take out the fourth Doctor at a very pivotal point in his history, because he altered history. He did a multiversal change. Big Finish did another story where Paul McGann, basically, some event was going on, and it opened his eyes to the greater multiverse. And he was talking about all these different universes that he could see. And some of the examples that he cited were stories from the comic books or the books, one in particular where he had like plucked out one of his own hearts, which was one of the book storylines and so on. So they acknowledge in Big Finish that, you know, really it was kind of smart of Big Finish, because they were for a while there teetering on, are we in the real universe? Are we going to be considered a side universe? Are people going to replace our reality with the books or the comics or whatever? And then they try to find this balance that they all exist. But realistically, for a long time, the excuse was the Time War. The Time War changed reality. So if you read the books for years and then the audios don't jive with the books, they kind of replace the books. Well, then, oh, I guess that was the Time War. But now you can sit there and say, great, the books are one reality. The movies, the audios are another reality, the comics another reality, and they're all connected, and they could connect at any time. So if David Tennant is from a multiverse and maybe traveling into our universe, look, I think we talked about this before on the podcast. One of the theories for series 11, I guess it was, when Jodie came on board, was that she had fell into an alternate reality. I don't know why people came up with that theory. Aside from, I guess, some of the discrepancies going on or whatever. But I really liked the idea. And actually, it was kind of like a spin on what happened to Rose. You know, at the end of her universe, it would have been neat to see the only reason that Yaz actually leaves her is because the Doctor's like, look, you can't come back to my universe. It's the same situation, but flipped, essentially. Although they stranded Rose in a parallel reality and whatever. But it was a neat concept. It was a neat idea. And what it would lend us is this whole concept that the Ruth fugitive doctor and the whole timeless child storyline and the whole Gallifrey was created based off of this mysterious child rather than Rassilon and Omega, like we learned before, is true. And that the doctor truly was Ruth in that original form, but in that alternate reality. And I think that's what's more clever, because then you're not rewriting Doctor Who's history. You're not rewriting William Hartnell as being the first. And I know they tried to do this in a few classic stories and so on, but it never got off the ground. But you're not rewriting those things. You're saying, hey, look, there is this reality where that is true. And then things can bleed into our reality where you can tell a great story where our doctor and multiversal doctors have to come together to fight a threat to save their own universes. Because ever since the new series started, how many times has the doctor saved the actual universe? You know, to the point where if the doctor saves a small village in England, people are just like, you know, whatever. He rebooted the universe like twice now, like whatever. You know, so I guess you have to up the ante. And what else can you do? Well, make him save more universes, you know? Yeah. I don't think that's necessary. Personally, I think we can still go back to the smaller stories. But if you're a grand writer wanting to tell a grand story, then that makes absolute sense. And I do think it would be fun, especially to be able to see those variations on our beloved doctors and not have to worry about where does it fall in their continuity or how does this screw up their continuity or why do they look the way they look. I think it opens up so many more possibilities.
It'd be kind of cool if there is no continuity, which I think I kind of said before, but if you take that multiverse prism, and I was just thinking about you sort of saying about the new adventures and BBC books all being separate realities, and then you have that moment in Nine's the Doctor where he references his audio chums, and it's like if the Doctor does literally see his history through multiple prisms, which is why he sometimes remembers some things and sometimes doesn't, and he could have a history of the looms, he could have a history of the timeless child, he could have a history of something more conventional, and they're all there that are constantly filtered through his memory. It'd be kind of interesting, because then you could just sort of say, well, we can tell multiple Doctor stories with Doctors played by older established Doctors or Doctors who don't sit in our continuity, because continuity is so fragmented, it doesn't matter. And you can trace a line of continuity, but there are other lines of continuity you can take as well. And Doctor kind of sits well with that, because UNIT's an example of that. Sorry, carry on.
No, you're fine. No, that's absolutely true. But what you're also doing with that is exactly what we said before, is you're validating every fan's beliefs and opinions. So therefore, maybe the internet can finally stop fighting each other on what's a good or a bad idea if you're allowed to believe that your idea is the continuity that you follow. And the other one that this person likes is the continuity that they follow, because they're both true. Neither's wrong, you know, and that would actually maybe some people are going to hate it. You're always just going to have that fan who's a friend of the wino. But basically, it allows you to open those doors to say to the fans, you know, stop playing about it. It's a TV show. It's some fun. Like what you like and enjoy it.
You mentioned earlier, Brian, something that I've also been thinking about, this idea that the current Doctor is in a wrong universe sort of thing.
Sure.
Where would the crossover point be for her to have gone into that wrong universe, do you think? Because I've thought about this, and I'm not 100% sure.
My favorite point, especially given that, you know, if you're going with the concept that Yaz belongs in that alternate universe, is when she got kicked out of the TARDIS in the very first episode of her era. Because it makes the most sense. You know, the TARDIS separates from her, gets lost on some other planet and dumps her on Earth kind of thing. It's like the perfect point to be lost and not really know. Now, honestly, it would have been better to have more contextual clues to have the Doctor going along and kind of like, wait, that's not right, or this thing's not right, or whatever, I guess something's wrong with time. But it just absolutely works there. And this isn't even, so people understand, this isn't even just because, like, I'm just going to say it, I'm not a fan of the Fugitive Doctor storyline. If it's a true storyline, I'm not a fan of it. Like, if it's a true kind of actual pre-Hartnell Doctor history. Not a fan of that for my own reasons. But her being in a parallel universe as a concept based on the first story is not just because of the fugitive. I'm not saying I like it because of the future, the fugitive doctor storyline. I'm saying I like it because I think it's actually a really neat concept and something we haven't done. We've had the doctor fall into a parallel reality essentially twice. You know, we had Inferno and then we had Rise of the Cybermen. And then, of course, obviously they went back to that reality again for a brief time. But we only ever had the Doctor, like, fall into a parallel reality in two instances. And it was resolved rather quickly. And I think it would be really neat to cap off an entire Doctor's era and just say, like, man, this Doctor just lived their life in this parallel reality. You're not invalidating Jodie. She's still a Doctor. She is and always will be the Doctor. It's just the Doctor, for a lifespan, much like the War Doctor, live their life in a very specific realm, which in this case is a multiverse, and then with the War Doctor was the Time War. And I think it's just a fascinating idea, because all of these kind of things that kind of were weird or odd about what Chibnall has told in his stories then start to make sense to that reality. And you can sit there and go, oh, geez, okay, I kind of get this a bit more now. This works for me. But even removing Chibnall as the writer, removing the Fugitive Doctor storyline, as a concept, it's great. We had it once before. I guess, actually, I'm sorry, I'm saying there's only two times, but I'm forgetting the East Space trilogy. So they did do it for a mm-hmm. couple of stories they ended up in an alternate universe, but they never did it for like a full season. And they were very much aware every time they landed in those alternate realities. Whereas here, it would be really neat. I would love to see a scene where Jodie takes that watch, opens that watch up, and the truth is revealed to her. And she's like, oh my God. And then you have like a ticking time bomb, like, oh, I didn't realize I've been in this universe this long. And now, like, the doorway back home is going to close. I got to get back home. And then when she gets back home and she does regenerate, or regenerates prior to getting home, however you want to do the story, comes back. And then all of a sudden, boom, there's alternate reality David Tennant, or any number of the previous doctors as alternate reality versions that are all there now. Like, you still didn't solve the problem and you've got to fix that problem, kind of thing. I think it's fascinating as a concept. I think the whole idea is great, to just say, even if you don't spell it out to the audience when she landed there, hell, it could have been in Capaldi's final season, right? Like, you could go back even further, because now you've got multiple Mundas beginning storylines.
Yeah.
You could take it back to there. I just think conceptually, there's a lot you can do. It opens up so many doors for storytelling, because now you can tell a Dalek story that you would never be able to tell before, or a Cyberman story, or a Master story, or even just a story on Earth, you know, which you could get away with anything long term and then fix it later when the whole multiverse gets finally repaired in some way.
If Russell T. Davies doesn't do a story called Doctor Who and the Multiverse of Master, there's something wrong with this world.
That's right, where we get to see the Master as a mom. No, but you know what? One of the whole time we've been talking about this, one of the things that we were not trolling the parallel for is where we're saying, like, all these multiverses are validating, you know, the past Spider-Man, the past Flashes, and things like that. One thing we're forgetting is that Doctor Who kind of, you know, is the king of this. We did it in 2005. Russell T. Davis validated the entire classic series and made this show bigger than it has ever been. One of the things we're going to talk about in here is actually testament to that, in my opinion, which we'll get to a little bit later. But a certain plaque on a wall that I don't think would be on that wall if the new series wasn't the hit that it was.
I think you're probably right. We can talk about that now anyway. Verity Lambert, TV legend and Doctor Who producer, honoured with blue plaque, is the headline on the Radio Times website. It was unveiled by Waris Hussein and Stephen Moffat at the Riverside Studios in London, presumably because there aren't many studios left in London where Verity Lambert worked. It has been unveiled. It had already been unveiled previously in 2014, which was also unveiled by Waris Hussein. However, the Riverside Studios closed shortly afterwards for redevelopment, and it reopened in 2019. So DWAS, the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, had held Verity's plaque in safekeeping and organised a second unveiling. And there was many friends, colleagues and admirers to see that. But I think you're right, Brian. I don't think anyone would have really cared that much. Or if they had, it wouldn't have been a blue plaque for her. It would have been something else, somewhere else, maybe something at the BFI.
And don't get me wrong, it's not that I don't think she deserves it.
No, no.
Especially being a female producer in the era that she was in, she absolutely deserves this. Just doing the job alone in that time era, and as well as she did the job. But I don't think she'd be getting the recognition that she's getting now if this show didn't blow up the way it did in 2005.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah, which, you know, it's good because she deserves the recognition. But it's also a little bit of a bummer to think about kind of thing, you know, like, but it's nice because you sit here and you look at all the people that poured their heart and soul into this TV show when, for all intents and purposes, most people out there, especially in the world they were working in, didn't care about it. They damn well deserve this recognition.
Are we actually, because something that we've been talking about on the multiverse thing, which I think is kind of interesting, is that Brian sort of mentioning the idea of a multiverse doctor, which I think is a potential thing, given, as Brian says, it gives opportunities to easily bring back actors without having to explain a lot of things. I'm still interested in where this tenant still sits, because I know people have been saying the specials. I mean, there was still that. Has there been any advancement on Davis's original statement, which was he's been doing new scenes, was his original point. And as we were saying the other week, the use of Jodie's police box prop in the shots that we're seeing kind of suggests it's very early on, because surely they're going to update that prop. I can't believe they won't.
Yes. This is why I'm not leaning toward the multiverse kind of angle. Now, at the same time, there are other rumors out there where I think the multiverse could still play into a storyline, but I think the David Tennant thing, in my opinion, I think it's going to be, you know, one of the first times the Doctor revisits an old face, as was established in the 50th anniversary. That's why we're seeing Jodie's TARDIS. That's why we're seeing David Tennant as the 14th Doctor rumors becoming true, in my opinion, because I feel Jodie's going to regenerate into Tennant. I think something's probably going to happen in her final story that's going to trigger You know when Matt Smith became Peter Capaldi, and we were meant to believe that he chose the Capaldi face for a reason, and then they kind of like half-heartedly gave it some meaning that he chose that face based on the David Tennant episode, Fires Pompeii. I feel something here is going to be very similar. Something's going to happen in Jodie's era that's going to make her regenerate and, you know, want to go back and kind of, in my opinion, probably help Donna get her memory back. Finds a way to cure Donna, but wants to go to her with a face she'll recognize, regenerates into David Tennant, the 14th Doctor, you know, the first revisited old face, rushes to the closet, finds the first clothing items he can find that look vaguely like what he used to wore, builds himself a new sonic screwdriver or the sonic does it, you know, because the new series likes to make the TARDIS do it, rather. And then for a couple of adventures, David Tennant and Donna Noble will be back out there doing what they do until he regenerates again, once again. And then the new adventures actually truly begin. My personal opinion is, you know, it's a 60th anniversary story, but it's also, it's the Doctor Who equivalent of a cash grab. They're trying to rein viewers back in by going with Old Faithful before they go to the new guy. Just because I think they think that they need that. But I think that's what's happening. I don't think this is a multiverse. I think the rumors of the 14th Doctor are actually true. That's why we're seeing Jodie's police box rather than David's police box or David Tennant's costume or anything like that. If there's anything multiversal going on, I think there's something else going on in a different story.
Here's my take. I think Donna will appear in the last episode of Jodie. I think that's going to be the segue,
right?
Because I think it was Janet Fielding suggested that, because someone sort of said, "I hope there's more stuff going on," and she says, "Oh, there's far more stuff going on in the episode than you realise," or something along those lines. Right. So it would make sense that if if Tennant does appear immediately, if they are going down that route, which might explain why there was that sort of conversation about there being no crossover scenes with the 14th Doctor and Jodie, might be in quite specific language. If they're going down that route, then it would make sense that you bring Donna in an episode earlier. And that would set up your route into bringing Tennant back the episode after, rather than it being him going to find her, maybe something to do with her. And given that we've already got two companions from the past in that last story, maybe that's the segue piece. But I don't know. Yeah. Who knows?
There's a line in the trailer about not being able to regenerate, isn't there? And maybe by encountering Donna, she is able to regenerate because Donna has a vestige of the Doctor in her.
There's two theories too. There's David Tennant's the 14th Doctor, and then there's a degeneration concept. Which I don't know. I mean, see how one plays out. But like, if you think about it, if the Doctor degenerates and becomes the 10th Doctor again, and then regenerates into Chuty, like, so what happens with all the Doctors that were in between? Are we considering the multiversal now? What are we doing? It's kind of weird, right? So they existed, obviously. You're just degenerating in body, I guess. But I think that's an interesting concept, and I think, honestly, that's probably on point that Donna will be in the centenary special.
So I think what's going on here for me is that I don't think Davis, and maybe Moffat as well, particularly like the numerical system. I think it's actually got old now, and I think it's become constrictive. I think when he did his offshoot Doctor from the Hand, that was almost a nod to it. And I think Moffat, to a degree, is sort of fudged to sort of comply to the marketing need for numbers when he sort of worked out how to do Jodie as the end of the timeline to bring in Capaldi, regenerative timeline by counting the second Tennant. I think it's getting to a point where, especially if they are going to move out and there's going to be more of a sort of feeling of scale to the universe of Doctor Who through Davis, and that means that maybe he will want to sort of either touch on previous Doctors, or as I said to Christian a few weeks ago, maybe even doing limited series with brand new Doctors, which if he keeps the Timeless Child's timeline, he can do multiple Doctors around that time of the Renegade Doctor. So he could have Rich D. Grant again be a Doctor, or Graham Norton, whoever he wants. So he could do one-offs. And if you're doing that, then that sort of chronology of the Doctor becomes less important. And it just becomes the idea that the Doctor is a character of story, which you can have different people play. And there can still be a continuity, a serial continuity for a main show. But that, the numbering of the Doctor becomes less important. In the same way that no one really talks about the numbering of James Bond. You just know the order of which they chronologically appeared. And I wonder if that's kind of where it will go. And maybe having this sort of ambiguity over what is the 14th? Is it a Tennant? Is it Chuty? Is there a degeneration? It doesn't matter. And I feel that's where the show is going to go. At the same time, being aware that it wants the numbers because it's kind of good for your marketing pitch. But it has become less important. Now, I can't remember what Doctor really we're on, because there's these, when you've got the War Doctor in there and you've got the second Tennant Doctor in there. And then again, if we've got a Renegade Doctor and maybe Doctors even before that, if that stays as continuity, it becomes meaningless.
Well, you know what? There's something else numerical that's causing a lot of confusion. Oh, thank you. Are 17 missing episodes of Doctor Who being held to ransom in the Middle East? Anyway, so this is a thing. And now a few years ago, we'd have gone, whoa, this is exciting. Missing episodes. And then we got a load of missing episodes. And then it went very, very quiet. And now this isn't the highlight of a podcast. This isn't a dedicated podcast. This isn't Gareth Kavanagh interviewing people from Doctor Who on our behalf who appeared in missing episodes. We're putting it right at the back of the podcast. But it could be 17 episodes. It could be 17 stories. As we know, 97 episodes remain missing. The most significant find in recent years was from Philip Morris, who located Enemy of the World and most of the Web of Fear. The claim has been made that there are more episodes still to be found that have been found in the Middle East. This claim was made by Craig Cable, who's a Doctor Who fan and author of the Doctor Who's Who, the story behind every face of the iconic Time Lord. This has been reported on the Doctor Who Companion, and they reference a story on the Plymouth Herald. The thing is, I mean, if they were going to... A few years ago, I'd have said, if this was going to happen now, then, you know, they've passed, they've missed their, you know, their peak profitability. But given how things have developed over the past 18 months with the Sony Television Pictures involvement, Bad Wolf, Russell T Davies, David Tennant coming back, Doctor Who kind of on a cusp of being possibly more successful than it's ever been before, if this pans out correctly, then if it's true, then these people have been quite canny in keeping hold of them. But then again, would they release them then? Maybe they'd be waiting for longer for an even more payday. So I don't know. I don't know if I buy it or not.
I honestly see plausibility in it because Philip Morris has said that there are certain collectors out there that have like an episode or two in their private collection. Some of them don't want to share it just because they don't want to share it. And some of them have mentioned that they don't want to share it because of all the backlash that Philip Morris got. Not understanding that Philip Morris took backlash because he also had some very specific opinions on the new series of Doctor Who and not just returning episodes. Like if they returned an episode, they could easily be a hero. But if they do what Philip Morris supposedly did or said, then yeah, you'll probably get backlash because that's how fans work these days. But I believe it because even in the prop collecting world, when you buy a prop from the show, the actual prop, most collectors out there will not tell people they have it. They will keep it in their collection. They will keep it secret. They will keep it private. They don't want people to know, but they're glad to tell other people in the know so that other people know they have it and that they feel special for it, but that they don't have to show photos to all the other fans out there who are dying to see it. Mm. In specific, the film world, for example, there's a collector out there who has an original 1977 print of Star Wars from the theaters before it was titled A New Hope. And he's happy to show you all sorts of clips of the restoration that he and his friends are doing on it. But he is also equally happy to tell you that he will never be sharing that print with anybody in the world. So he has it. He's thrilled to have it. He's thrilled to watch it. He's thrilled to restore it. But you won't be able to see it. I absolutely believe that there are collectors out there that do have more stories that for whatever reason, they're not sharing it either to feel special or because they're afraid they'll get backlash. Maybe they're afraid that they shouldn't have it, or maybe they're just holding out for the right price. So I truly believe that some of this could be true. Maybe the numbers aren't exactly true, but I believe it could be true.
Now, Brian Terranova, you mentioned props just now. And as you know, the David Tennant returning Doctor character, not sure what to call him, has a new sonic screwdriver. Have you managed to have a good look at this?
I've had about as good a look as anybody's able to have of it so far. Yes.
And are there plans in motion?
There's no plans because I don't want to make a close enough only to have to buy a better replica when you can see it better later. So I'm at the point and an age now where I know once better pictures and reference are out, then we'll make a better copy of it.
Yeah.
Being the type of collector that I am, I'll get it just because whatever, I like sonic screwdrivers. But based on the pictures that I've seen so far, I don't like it. So I'm going to be buying it just to have it. Like, it's not terrible, but it's like, it's not the one I would want if I were the doctor, right? And that's how I always put these things into context. But I think the sonic screwdriver is weird, right? Like, I look at a lot of fan concepts, and while a lot of fans come up with, like, interesting designs, to me, they're not sonic screwdrivers. They often look like lightsabers, or they look like steampunk this or that. They don't look like what to me is a sonic screwdriver. To them, it does, right? Because that's their mind of a sonic screwdriver, but not to me. But at the same time, I feel like the classic series got lucky when they used a couple of Thunderbird props to make the Pertwee and Baker and Davison prop, because that's such a classic design. That is the sonic screwdriver. And then by nature and by extension, you know, the TV movie kind of nailed their design as well for McGann and McCoy.
Yeah.
But after 2005, you know, the Russell T Davis era with the Eccleston and Tennant prop, who they frankly, while the classic design is amazing, I think Russell T Davis's era absolutely nailed a sonic screwdriver design. I think they just absolutely got it right on the first go. I don't think there's been a good design of a sonic screwdriver since then. And I'm sorry to say that, like I own them all, but I'm not a huge fan of the Matt Smith, the Capaldi, or the Whitaker Sonic right now. I guess the War Doctors is okay, but it's just a play on the classic design, which is probably why it's okay.
Is it?
But yeah, I don't like the others.
Is it because they're not utilitarian enough? Is that the right word? Don't feel like a tool?
Exactly. Well, that's part of it, right? Like, Matt Smith's is so huge, right? And you always see it like weighing down his jacket because he's always got it in his jacket pocket, right? It's so huge. And if you've ever played with any of these actual replicas, they're very heavy. Matt Smith's and Peter Capaldi's, actually, Matt Smith's and Jodie Whittaker's are quite heavy. Capaldi's is kind of in between them, right? But Capaldi's has all these sharp, jagged edges. You try and stick it in your pocket, you're not going to get it out as quickly as you would the classic or the RTD era, which just are very sleek, right? But Matt Smith's like, okay, the flick to open action, it's kind of cool. But it's also in the show, in my opinion, and it's just like stupid thoughts that I have, it's not used well, right? Matt sonics something, then he flicks it open and stares at nothing on the sonic screwdriver to take a reading off of it. Whereas you have this great design, you could flick it open to do very heavy duty or long range work and keep it closed for short range work. Like, it looks like there's this neat built-in function to it, right? Like, which is presumably the intent behind the ability to thumb extend the Russell T Davis and David Tennant one as well. Which I don't think that was used to full potential either. The Peter Capaldi one, you know, it's neat that it's got the track swirling emitter, but the claws on the side, and I always say about the Peter Capaldi one, it looks like somebody made an Erector Set sonic screwdriver because it's unfinished, right? Like, the handle is just a couple of metal frames rather than being like a proper handle. The metal claws, then they just grasp everything that they touch in your pocket. And then Jody's, I don't like it. It's a clump of metal. It's not even like there's no style design there. You know, it's, I don't even know how to describe it. When I first saw it, I said, oh, this is a cool alien device. I see some aliens using this as like their ray gun or something like that. I'm curious to see what their race looks like. And it was her sonic instead. And it was like, oh, right. Oh, okay. That doesn't look at all like a sonic to me.
It's similar to Yoda's lightsaber with that little kink in it.
Yeah, it's just, I don't know, it's just, they don't work. Now, don't get me wrong, they're not, design-wise, they're okay designs. I don't think they're sonic screwdrivers in my mind. They're only sonic screwdrivers now because I know that they are, kind of thing. And the new one that I'm seeing David Tennant flash around reminds me a lot of, not wholly, but it evokes anyway, a lot of the Weta sonic screwdriver that Paul McGann was using for a little while that Big Finish has now adapted. And I do not like that one at all. It's so that the biggest problem with the McGann, the Matt Smith and the Capaldi is their size. They're huge and they're beefy. And I don't think they work. Whereas the Eccleston Tennant one easily can fit in your pocket. And it makes sense to me as a multi-tool. I don't know. Other people love them. So people are going to fight us in the comments. They're going to tell us why they love them. And they're not wrong, because they love them and it makes sense to them. And that's what a sonic screwdriver is to them. The same thing as all those fan-made ones are a sonic screwdriver to them. I'm talking about what a sonic screwdriver is to me. But I think Russell, overall, I think Russell's era actually nailed the look of not just the sonic screwdriver, but the TARDIS, the console room, and all sorts of other things in his era. He just absolutely got right. Whereas Moffat and Chibnall's eras, they nailed a couple of things here or there, but for the most part, they missed the mark for me. So for my own personal opinion, for what makes Doctor Who for me, or what makes these props for me, these things just aren't right. So I will say I actually really like David's new look. Obviously, it's just a riff off of his old look, but I think it's really cool. And I will absolutely want to get those clothing items because I think they are really neat. I just wish that they had paired his actual old sonic screwdriver with it because I think it would work better. I'm not that keen on the one that they gave. Now, I'd like to see it in more detail, but since you can see the business end of it fairly well, I'm kind of like, meh, I'm not that thrilled. I wish I was here saying better things. I really do. I feel kind of bad, but it is early days, and yeah. It is also telephoto lens photos at the same time.
Yeah. You can find out more about what Brian thinks about various sonic screwdrivers in his various books on Custerbras, the RTD era sonic screwdrivers, a compiled history, and the other one, a compiled history of the classic series sonic screwdrivers. They're worth checking out, and they're free for you to download on custerbras.co.uk. I'm really, really pleased to have Brian back on the podcast with a K, as we don't call it anymore very often. And I tell you who else is happy as well. Hey. One for the older listener there. But I think it's probably time for us to wrap this up. So we've covered loads of stuff about mainly what Brian thinks about things, but that's absolutely fine because it's, as we've spun off, we talked a bit about the multiverse, we talked more about the David Tennant madness. I still can't get my head around it. I really can't. To be honest with you, if this had been like, I don't know, if this had been like straight after, I mean, I think it's come at the right time. If this had been straight after anything else, really, I think I'd have been a bit meh. But with, even if it had been like 2 years ago, I think I'd have been very pleased with it. But at the same time, because I enjoyed Flux in the way that I did, it seems like it's come along at the right time rather than feeling like, I think a couple of years ago, after Jodie's first two series, if this had happened then, this had felt like a life jacket or, a life ring being tossed in. David Tennant coming along to save Doctor Who, Russell T. Davies coming along to save Doctor Who. But I think, and I know that ratings don't back this up, but then we don't really know what ratings are for Doctor Who anymore in any sort of real tangible sense beyond what those numbers are. We don't really know what they mean. It happening now after a run of episodes that were good and a really inventive Christmas episode as well. Less said about the Easter episode, the better, but you can't expect like every episode to be superb. I think it's come at exactly the right time and I'm really excited. And I do struggle to believe that it's actually, that they're actually going in this direction. I'm quite thrilled by it, which is good because it means Doctor Who's getting a buzz back, which it needs for success and for a show, as James and I have recalled countless occasions over the past few months, a show that is 17 years old now, it having a buzz again is really, really cool.
Yeah, and honestly, I really like echo your thoughts. I know I've already said what I said about the Fugitive Doctor storyline and how I feel about that, but I largely enjoyed Flux. And I think Christian and I were talking prior to the podcast, I think for me as a fan, if the Fugitive Doctor storyline goes where it's seemingly going, it could make or break Flux for me, unfortunately, but largely I enjoyed Flux and I agree with you. The special after that, I really enjoyed that. Whereas the Sea Devil special, man, they nailed the look of the Sea Devils, but the story just failed to capture me. I was like, man, you guys just came off of these like couple of good ones that were actually dragging me back in. And then you hit me with that one. So hopefully the Centenary picks it up again.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. That's it. We'll be back again for another podcast soon. And wherever possible, we'll get Brian involved as well. Until next time, it's goodbye from us.